Happy July 4th weekend. The Jets Collective is live right here on YouTube, presented by Prize Picks. My name is Jake Asman, joined as always by BT Brandon Tierney from BT Unleashed. Rich Samini's on vacation, so BT, you and I will hold it down this afternoon.
We will, and if anybody needs a vacation, it's that guy, well, the way the Jets put him through the riggers. So, get that tan going there, Richie. You know, get a couple of cocktails at the pool, because, you know, the Jets find a way to always make your life interesting, and ours as well. So we're going to have some fun, me and you. Let's roll, baby.
That is certainly true. Rich, of course, will be joining us at Gangrene Beach Club down at the shore. A little less than a week to go from that, a little more than a week, I should say, from that July 11th. So Krebet's going to be there. Samidi's going to be there. BT, myself, Fireman Ed, and some of your favorite content creators and reporters all in one spot. So we're looking forward to that. BT, we start with the Geno Smith situation. The latest update, I think it's fair to say there's really not much of an update. I'm going to pull up the Samini tweet when he spoke with the police department down in Davie, Florida, which is the area that oversees where Geno Smith's incident allegedly occurred. The initial tweet from Rich, this was last Tuesday, so a little more than a week ago, the spokesperson from the police department said, "We were informed yesterday evening that during review, it was determined that this case is being further investigated by detectives. It is active and we cannot release any additional information at this time." I know when we talked about this last week on the show, Rich said some sort of announcement, some sort of statement from the police could be coming any day. That has not happened at this point. What are your personal thoughts on where we're at right now with this Geno situation?
Yeah, it's dicey, Jake, because, you know, listen, we want to stay in our lane and want to be responsible and certainly make sure we dot the I's with everything, but certainly something like this. What I take away, you know, I love police shows. So I love The Rookie, NYPD Blue, my dad's retired detective. So I've got a little bit of a basis on this. And at least in terms of what I take away is that there's just not a whole lot of evidence right now. As the search and as the investigation progresses and there's not a lot of noise and there's no formal charges that have been levied, not that something can't develop. I mean, maybe they're just, you know, turning over every single rock which I'm sure they are, or they have a little, but they don't have enough. So they've got to validate the claims here. You know, there's two totally different sides. I just think it's as simple as right now, my non-expert opinion is that they just don't have enough. I mean, from a football point of view, I think you should feel better about the fact that this probably won't follow Geno into the season. But crazier things have happened, but that's how I see it right now.
The only thing I think that would cause people to be alarmed is if there's any charges. Like, again, if he's not charged with anything, an open investigation doesn't limit his availability for training camp. It doesn't it limit his availability for the season. And I thought Rich made a great point with us last week that even if he were to be possibly suspended, the way these things usually play out, it would be for the following season. It wouldn't be for this one. So, unless something drastically changes here, I'm fully expecting Geno Smith to be the week one starter, start all the games, and, you know, certainly be ready to roll when training camp starts at the end of this month.
I would agree with that. You know, I wonder, though, I mean, that's our take, and, you know, it's not our profession. It's our profession to talk about this, but I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the Jets here. Like, even though that is a very logical presentation, you know, I agree with what you said. You seem to pretty much agree with what I said. That seems to be the consensus. Obviously, Rich doing the reporting stuff, and nobody's better than Rich at that. But, you know, I wonder inside the building how they elect to handle this, at least to have a potential secondary play here, just in case something does develop very serious late, and then there are charges, and maybe the league steps in, and maybe the timeline is sped up a little bit, even, you know, deviating from what Rich presented. So, you know, I think that you just kind of attack this from the Jets perspective with an open mind. You talk to Geno, you get their side. If Rich is communicating with the authorities, as he has, you know, the Jets have done their homework and their due diligence as well. I don't think it's become a league issue yet. It's still on the Jets doorstep under their purview. But I would think, don't you agree, Jake, that at least on the most cursory basic level, you've got to at least have some sort of strategic plan just in case, right?
I agree. And it will be interesting because if they were to add a quarterback, you could very easily say, well, it has something to do with Geno. They just wanted to get another veteran in there. They didn't like what they saw from Zappe. Klubnik was dealing with the back stuff at the end of minicamp, and he's a rookie picked in the fourth round. Maybe you just want another veteran in there anyway. And if they do that, there's going to be a lot of Jet fans saying, well, wait a second, are they only doing this because of Geno? Whereas I don't know if one necessarily definitely relates to the other, but I would not be surprised if they added another veteran before training camp started.
Me too. And they can mask it, really, not that they would even have to really comment on that specifically, I don't think, but they can mask it as, you know, we were in the market for a backup quarterback all summer, which is one of the reasons why we had exploratory conversations with Russell Wilson. Like, it's not like they didn't at least kick that. Now, how serious was it? I don't know. And I'm happy that, you know, that Russ is not going to be on the depth chart. No disrespect. I think he'll be better at TV at this point than he is at football. But I think that because that was already out there, that was a news item. You know, you had a look into the Jets' thought in terms of how they at least, again, on the most basic level, want to construct whatever is behind Geno on the depth chart. So it's not like some wild deviation that's going to, oh, wow, the Jets, they're panicking, they're pressing. Oh, this might be worse than it is. It would really just be consistent with what they were doing about a month and a half or so ago, Jake.
Totally agree. If you're looking at names, I mean, it's not great. I mean, we know Russell Wilson's going to TV. Cooper Rush is still out there. Rich said last week he thinks the ship sailed on the Jets and Cooper Rush. I think a name to watch if they actually did need to add a quarterback would be Andy Dalton. Philly's got four QBs. Yeah. Dalton played for Frank Reich in Carolina. I think he's still capable if he's got time to throw, which we all, I think, agree the Jets have a solid offensive line. I don't love Andy Dalton. I am a fellow redhead, though, so I try to root for redheaded dudes out there. But he'd be a name I think they would potentially be interested in, and he could actually be available given the Eagles' quarterback room.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you should give Jason Garrett a call. You should send Evan Roberts a text. I mean, listen, open it up to the entire redheaded community. I mean, right now, Cade's the backup. So I don't think it's the worst thing to exhaust all the options. But, yeah, I mean, Andy Dalton, you know, it's funny. Like, we saw him play so many years, going back to his Cincinnati days where he was drafted. And they had so many weapons around him, and he was the kind of player, won a lot of regular season games. But, you know, just didn't quite have it. And if he was just a little bit better and a little bit more effective, he would have been a star. Because you look back at some of Andy Dalton's good seasons with the players that he ran with on offense, where they were putting up points. And he was certainly above average as an NFL quarterback statistically. But, you know, a little short in the athletic department, but very long in the IQ department, very long in the experience, and very much an asset if it was to come to this. I wouldn't go nuts if it was Dalton, where in the film room, on the practice field, also as a bit of a liaison to Geno as a fellow veteran, but also for Cade Klubnik. So I still think that, and it might not be the first day of camp, which is a couple of weeks away here, I would be surprised at this point. We sit here July 2nd, week one, Tennessee, it's Geno and it's Cade Klubnik. That would surprise me. And quite frankly, I would think that that would be a little irresponsible unless they just love Cade. But then again, think about how the OTAs were truncated, where his back flared up. You just mentioned that. The last 3 or 4 days didn't do a whole lot. I think he just got married the other day. I saw him dancing, so that's a good sign.
I think you're right. He did get married.
Right? Yep. I don't know how he dances, but at least he's moving. But I don't really know what the Jets were able to extrapolate from once they got him in the building. And I mean, independent of what they saw on film and how he interviewed and why they moved up 17 or 18 slots to get him in the draft, which they did. There just wasn't a lot of evaluation in terms of, even though they were in shorts, but you didn't see a ton of throws. Now, when he played early, he looked pretty good. 7-on-7s, 11-on-11s. The numbers were very good, but you're throwing against air. There's no pass rush. You're not really jamming guys at the line of scrimmage. It's very basic stuff. So, I don't know. Do you think that it's an overreaction, Jake, to say that if the Jets don't solidify their backup quarterback spot, that it could really sabotage their season? I don't. Do you?
Well, I think it really comes down to what's the goal of the season. We all believe the head coach is on the hot seat, right? So you got to win games. So if they go into the year with Geno and he suffers an injury, I'm not going to say what happens to him. Like, he doesn't go full Aaron Rodgers, but if he gets hurt early on, first half of the year, he's got to miss some games. And Cade Klubnik comes in and doesn't play well. Like, no one's going to give this regime a pass for that. And now, that's more on Muji than Glenn, I guess, in this scenario. But, like, as a fan, I would be fine just getting an evaluation of Klubnik because I don't have the highest hopes for the season. But the coaching staff is not looking at it that way. They know their jobs are on the line. They need to win. So I wonder who ultimately has, like, the final voice there. Obviously, if, like, Frank Reich went to Darren Muji and said, look, like, Klubnik's not it. Zappy's not it. We need a better backup. I would think Muji would go out there and listen to a guy like Reich, and then Aaron Glenn, I'm sure, would be on board as well. I just wonder what the dynamics are for like what their actual plan is for that quarterback room. If they know they have Geno as the starter, and then behind them, there's giant question marks on who the backup actually should be.
Yeah, and I think the other aspect here is, you know, there comes a point, maybe not like year one of a regime, but there's a point where you owe it to the rest of the veterans in that locker room to give yourself a chance to come out of a tunnel and score some points and win some football games here. So whether it's Garrett Wilson, whether it's Breece Hall, whether it's Minkah Fitzpatrick on the defensive side, a veteran, obviously, and some other veterans that they brought in, like, you've got to at least be able to, you know, based on the depth chart, present to them very early that, no, we have options and we have a plan. And even if we do get derailed with quarterback one, you know, we're not going to miss that much of a beat. Like, it can't turn into, God forbid, Geno gets down or goes down, and then we're watching 8, 9, 10, 11 weeks of football and the Jets are scoring 10 points and like their quarterback 17 for 37. Like, we just can't have it. It cannot happen. Like, that is poisonous at this point for the regime, for the veterans I mentioned. So I think that they know that. That's the good news. And I think that they'll address it. When, I'm not sure, but I would be surprised if they don't.
Or if you want to spin it positive, if they don't address it, maybe Klubnik actually showed up ready to roll for the start of training camp, looked pretty good, and they're like, we actually have our guy that we feel pretty good about. That's the only way you could maybe spin it positive. They choose not to add any veteran quarterback by the time we get to week one.
Yeah, but you better be right with that assessment.
Yes.
You know, you better be right. That sounds good. Hey, day two of training camp, Cade's fine. The back's healthy. He looks good. Rich firing off the tweets. Hey, listen, made some good throws. He found Garrett. He found Mason Taylor. He found this guy. Found Breece out of the backfield for a 40-yard wheel route. He beat Donald Cisco or he beat Minkah. He looks good, but you better be right because that energy is going to dissipate the moment the real games start.
You're watching the Jets Collective. BT, Jake Asman with you. Hit the like button. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel. Big thank you to everyone who continues to tune in to our shows this summer. We will be live Tuesday nights in the fall when the games actually begin. But for right now, we're weekly, so make sure you stay subscribed to the YouTube channel, and you'll be updated when we go live each and every week. As always, we are presented by Prize Picks. It's fitting we're talking about Geno here because, again, we talked about this several weeks ago. The numbers for Geno on Prize Picks are so low. Maybe Prize Picks thinks he's getting suspended. Maybe they think he's going to, God forbid, get injured. But very low numbers for Geno Smith here. If he doesn't eclipse both the 14.5 passing touchdown mark and 2,600 passing yards mark, something has gone seriously wrong for the Jets with Geno.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, that's disaster at that point. The only way it's not disaster is if Cade Klubnik plays and he's like phenomenal. Then it will be awesome, you know. Then almost get the best of both worlds. Where, all right, you know, then you can even push it further downstream. Where, if, and this is a lot of variables, clearly, and with the Jets, it rarely works out favorably. But if Geno doesn't play well, or he gets hurt, God forbid, Cade plays well, the now is obviously positively impacted because Kitty just drafted is playing well and moving the football. But also, depending upon how well he plays, it could impact what the Jets do with those three first round picks in 2027. Now that's pie in the sky, as optimistic as you can get, to think that Klubnik, however he plays and whenever he plays, is going to look so good, and he fortifies the position to such an extent that the Jets don't draft the quarterback next April or whatever, late April, early May. Like, I wouldn't put money on that, but you know, there is the remote possibility that that's happened before. Think about Flynn got a lot of money back in the day from Seattle. Remember that?
Yep.
Remember he had the one game with Green Bay. I think he threw six touchdowns as a Packer when
last Rodgers game was of the year against the Lions. I remember.
Yeah. Last game of the year. I think the Lions were still pretty bad. Anyway, he threw six touchdowns, and then they drafted Russell Wilson in the third or I think fourth round. And he basically won the job right away. So, you know, there are a few select stories where that happens, but let's face it. Do you really think that we'll be that lucky to have that fate? I'm hoping, and I'm positive. You know, I'm generally more optimistic than not, but that seems like a stretch.
Again, Geno's numbers seem low to us. If you want to make your own picks, tail, you can follow along, check it out, Prize Picks. Download the app, click the link in the description for the show. Use that code HMA. You put $5 in, you can have $50 instantly in your account to start making some lineups. Shout out to Prize Picks for sponsoring the Jets Collective. BT, here's an interesting conversation that was happening on Jets Twitter this past week. Breakout players for the New York Jets. I'm going to put up the tweet that was inspired from Jet Nation here that inspires this conversation. The question is, top three Jets you're expecting to see a big jump from this year. So you could pick any player you want, and you could kind of come up with your own criteria for the answer to this question. I have three in mind. I'll let you give your three first, and if you happen to say one that I had, I got a couple backups in mind as well.
Okay. I'm going to start with no real order, but I'll start with Braylon Allen. I know he looks phenomenal. I know he put on great weight without diminishing his speed. He is a physical force, man, and he looked really good before he went down in that Miami game. So Braylon Allen to me, now you can just share. I'm not even saying like the totality of his numbers. I'm not like 1,200 yards or 50 catches. I'm not saying that, but I think from game to game, series to series, game plan to game plan, I think Braylon Allen's going to be very involved. I've got high hopes for him. Number two, and I've talked about him a lot, and it's interesting. I always ask Rich, like, hey, what's this? Because we didn't hear much about Mason Taylor in camp, right? Kind of slid under the radar a bit. And I was all about the Jets drafting Kenyon Sadiq, which they obviously did. So I love that. And, you know, he's recovering from the hernia. But I think that Mason Taylor is a real modern type of NFL tight end. He's got some wiggle. He's got a little juice. He can make – there's some matchups, whether it's a linebacker down the seam or a couple of safeties who can't run. Like, I really – not to mention with Garrett Wilson and some of the other weapons that will have to be paid a lot of attention to, I think Mason Taylor is going to take a nice little step forward. I thought he looked good when he played last year. I like him a lot. So I've got Braylon Allen. I got Mason Taylor. And I'm going to go with Will McDonald in the sense that when you look now, obviously part of this is because David Bailey's going to be on the other side and hopefully he's worthy of a number two pick and he gets some double teams and he does some damage. It frees it up for Will McDonald. But what I need from Will McDonald is like, I can't have one game where you get three sacks, then you go a month and you're quiet with a half a sack and then you pop for one game with two. I think that this is the year. I know he put on some good functional weight as well, 10, 12 pounds, which he needed to do. He was a little bit too easy to just, you know, kind of push away. Probably developed another move or two in the trenches. I want to see more game-to-game consistency. There was just too much for his talent and his explosion. And when he looks good, he looks great. But when he doesn't look great, he's too often invisible. And I need a big step forward. I think we get it from Will. How about you?
I like all three of those. So the first name I thought of for this was Olu Fashanu. He's going into year three. He's a guy that didn't play a ton of football growing up. He was a late bloomer to even playing high school football. Then he goes to Penn State, really good, but he's super young when he was picked. I thought at times last year he looked really good. I think there were some moments where he was still kind of going through it in his first full year starting. But I like the talent, love the work ethic, love what I've heard about Olu from his peers all throughout the offseason program. So Olu Fashanu, I think, really takes a big step now in his third season and solidifies himself as this team's long-term answer at left tackle going forward. The second name.
I got a question for you real
quick. Go ahead.
Do you think he's got – I love that, by the way. And I thought about going with Olu myself. Good pick. You think in, let's say, 2 years – you know, a little more strength, more know-how. You think he can grow into one of the top five left tackles in football?
I don't know if he's a top five guy, but I think I can't sit here and say I'd be shocked. I think he's going to be a top 10 player at his position in the league. Mm-hmm. And was DeBrickashaw Ferguson ever like top five?
He
was close, very good.
Close.
I don't know if he ever made an all pro team though. He made the Pro Bowl a couple of times. I kind of see Olu being someone that we're never like concerned about. He's durable. He's out there every week. High character guy. If that's top five, you could argue it certainly is. But I think he's going to be someone that we're never concerned about. And he's probably the next big name Jet, if you want to call him a big name, that could get an extension after next year. They're going to pick up the fifth year option. He'll be going into his fourth year. That's when you'd want to get a deal done with someone like him.
Yep. Good call.
The second name, I think you'll like this. Tavondre Sweat. We debated his actual weight a few weeks ago. Everything you heard about Tavondre Sweat is how talented he is, but he just needs to kind of be focused, be reeled in, and maximize his full potential. I know that one thing that Aaron Glenn did well this offseason was he hired a legitimate defensive line coach in Carl Dunbar. I think that was a great hire for David Bailey, but also for a guy like Tavondre Sweat, if there's anyone who could maximize his full potential, I think Dunbar could get that out of Sweat. And I also love what I've heard from a guy like Harrison Phillips, who said that he's taken Sweat under his wing, a true pro, could show him the ropes. I think Tavondre Sweat, you know, was in a dysfunctional environment in Tennessee. They had the coaching change there. I think in the right situation, which might actually be in that Jet D-line room, he's a guy that I think could take a big step and warrant some of the hype and excitement that Tennessee Titans fans had around him when they took him in the second round 2 years ago.
He's a really important player. I'm curious where you go with your third one.
The third one is A.D. Mitchell. Because it seems like every time we've done a Sumini OTA recap or mini camp report, it's A.D. Mitchell made another outstanding play. Him and Gino have the chemistry. Another guy, second round pick, needed the change of scenery. I think in the right situation, he could break out. Gino, say whatever you want about him as a player. He could throw the deep ball. He's got a cannon for an arm. That fits A.D. Mitchell's strengths. I think A.D. Mitchell's a guy that could take a big jump and be, I don't know if he's ever going to be a number one or even a number two, but if he's a solid three and you have Omar Cooper and you have Sadiq Taylor and we know Garrett Wilson, mm-hmm. that's the makings of a solid offensive skill group. And I think AD could be a really big part of that.
You know what's interesting with our list here too? Like the guys that I pick, even though I think Allen's going to take a step forward, you can still present a Jets offense where, say, if he doesn't really take a step forward, where the Jets offense could still be really good, right? You could still – same with Mason Taylor. You know, Sadiq, and you got Ruckert as a blocker as well. Like, you don't, even though you'd like to see, you don't need Mason Taylor to take the step forward. I think they need Will McDonald, but to take that step forward. The guys that I identified, I think you can kind of work around, even if they're stagnated a bit. The players that you mentioned, I don't really know that the Jets can function if they on a high-ish or representative level, acceptable level, if they don't take a step forward. Like, Tavondre Sweat, to me, is paramount to just finally snuffing out the opposing run, getting you, you know, third and sevens, third and eights, pin the ear backs, Bailey here, McDonald here, blitz from the line back. Let's go. So, like, he's got to play well. And I think A.D. Mitchell absolutely has to play well. And there were times last year where, you know, they would show a replay watching the game, and he's wide open. He's got 3-4 yards on somebody. And the Jets quarterbacks just couldn't find him for myriad reasons, whether he's running for his life or he's just not seeing the field, or it's an inaccurate throw. So I think two very different lists, but I think they paint a very different picture. I think we nailed it. I think those are good ones, man. I like it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And, you know, when you look at a guy like Mason Taylor, I remember I texted with someone in the Jet front office after the first night of the draft. And when I brought up Sadiq to this person, the first thing they mentioned was, this is going to be great to open things up for Garrett and Mason. Like, Mason was one of the people he mentioned alongside of Garrett. And I look at it like, that tells me Frank Reich's going to have a real plan for Sadiq. A lot of 12 personnel, two tight ends. I think Mason Taylor's a guy who will be on the field a lot. Hopefully he stays healthy. I know he dealt with the knee injury at the end of last year and they shut him mm-hmm. down. Let's hope he's ready to go, because he's a guy that I know, when the Jets picked him in the second round, people were like, all right, good player. Is he worth the second round pick? Now we got to see him take that big jump in year two.
It's going to be exciting. And it's crazy too, because, you know, as we talk about these offensive weapons and, you know, what we expect, Mitchell, Mason Taylor, the rookie Sadiq, you know, Breece off the contract, Braylon Allen, obviously Garrett, who's got to eat. Like, it's crazy because the Jets have been so bad, but there's actually a lot of options, and you're going to have to spread that ball around effectively. And that, as you point out, is on Frank Reich. That's good, because I think we both have an inherent amount of trust that he's going to see things. He's going to be up in the box, not on the field. He's going to have one thing the Jets didn't have, and I get it, because he was a rookie coach. Like, you know, depending upon, like, if you're at your own midfield or your own 49 or even the opponent's 45, 46, and it's like third and two, you know, like, and they don't get anything. Well, Aaron's kind of like, and Engstrand, like, all right, what do we do here? Frank Reich is going to, I think, very effectively communicate that, like, hey, we're going for this no matter what. Here's the two plays. Let's go. I think this is going to be so much more synergy and cohesion and a plan, more aggression, more adaptability. So, you know, Frank Reich's not playing, but we very easily could have put him on there in terms of the most important Jets going in, you know?
No doubt. And I'm glad we're talking about Frank Reich, because this sets up our next topic. Chad Pennington was a guest on the Jets In-House podcast with Eric Allen. And here's our guy, Chad, who just turned 50. So happy belated to Chad Pennington. Yep. By the way, that's crazy to say out loud. Chad Pennington, 50 years old. But
looks good. Looks young.
He does. He does. This was Chad talking about the Jets' new OC, Frank Reich.
Jets have a new offensive coordinator, Frank Reich. You've known him for a long time. Mm-hmm. When you heard that AG was hiring a seasoned veteran guy like Frank, who played in the league, who's been a long-time coach, what was your reaction?
Well, first of all, Frank's an amazing human being. Amazing. He was a great player, and he has developed into a really great coach. And the reason that I'm excited is anytime you have a coordinator for a quarterback, anytime you have a coordinator that can see it through your eyes,
yeah,
changes everything because he understands how difficult it is. And you can only see it through a quarterback's eyes if you've played that position and you know how difficult the position is. And so all the guys that will be working with Frank will really enjoy the fact that he can see it through their eyes, and which changes everything. Dan Henning was that way. He could see it through my eyes. And he knew that, yeah, this play may look great on paper, but standing back there, it's not so fun. And so, or you think that it's not, you know, we need to not do that. So I think that will be something that he really brings to the table. Not only that experience as a coach, not only the experience as a player, but the experience being behind center. Yeah. I think that's something that you cannot discount at all.
Seeing it through a quarterback's eyes. Chad would know. What do you make of those comments there, BT?
I love him. I tapped the brakes on Frank Reich being a great player, which was the first.
He had a great moment in all time.
Yeah, he did. Easy there, Chad. Chad's a very well-read, very intelligent, I was going to say young man, but man at this point. You don't need to jump into the hyperbolic end of the pool. Take it easy. Frank was a backup. Frank had a great moment. We love that Frank's here. Everything else, check. Totally agree with. You know, and the thing, too, is that when I look at the what the Jets have done over these years, and again, not to relitigate the misery, but they've made their job, the organization's job, so much more difficult by always trusting and handing the keys to guys with no experience, man. And it's ample. So you have a quarterback with no experience. You got an OC with no experience. You got a head coach with no experience. You got a young GM, whatever it might be. You got young players. Like, somebody's got to be the Yoda in the room, the sage, you know, Yoda with a couple of gray whiskers out there that's been through the rigors. And as Chad absolutely nailed it, especially somebody who's put his hands, you know, on a center's ass. And I'm sorry, I'm graphic here, but and has actually played the position in the pros. Because Engstrom played collegially, and we know it's different. It's a different spot.
Chad Pennington, I think, nails it, just like the experience factor. And it's interesting. You look at what the Jets are basically trying to pull off. I used this example on my personal channel earlier this week. It's almost like the Jets are trying to squeeze, like, the 2015 season that they got from Fitz and Chan Gailey, who was the veteran seasoned offensive coordinator then, out of Geno Smith. And then Frank Reich. Now, the irony, of course, is Geno was supposed to start that year as the young guy, you know, coming into his own in year three, and we know what happened. But here's Geno now as a veteran. He's the Ryan Fitzpatrick figure in this example. And Chan Gailey is now what Frank Reich is hopefully going to be. Like, does he have another good year left play calling, working with a vet quarterback who's seen it all, has a chip on his shoulder, we hope, and is trying to, you know, basically have a better redemption story with his time with the Jets?
I hope so. I mean, we all do. You know, one of the differences, I know you know this, you know, Garrett's a young veteran at this point, but that 2015 team, you know, you had Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker, guys who were
Quincy Enunwa, Chris Ivory, Bilal Powell, Nick, and DeBrick was still on the line. That was a very underrated Jet team that we know.
I agree. And they won 10 games, and they just didn't play well up in Buffalo, obviously. Fitz threw a couple of picks, got picked off in the end zone, as we remember. But, you know, to me, and Enunwa was a guy.
Yeah.
I really liked Quincy Enunwa. He had a great body, played with a physicality. Like, when he had the neck issue, which derailed his entire career, I thought that really hurt them. But, yeah, I mean, listen, here's what I'm confident with Frank Reich. You know, not that he's going to be perfect, obviously, but nothing's going to surprise him. He's going to be very detail-oriented, very buttoned up. He'll communicate. Like, there'll be nothing to interpret what he wants done. The players will know. The one thing, and we won't know until the season progresses, has he adapted a little bit to the changing ways of the NFL? I mean, even Pat Riley, you know, you're a big Knicks guy, a little bit too young, even though I know you know the 90s Knicks. But, like, when Pat Riley, I always use this example. When Pat Riley was coaching the Lakers, it was up and down, up and down, up and down, 130 points, run you out of the gym. Then he comes to the Knicks. He's got completely different physical skill set. We're going to half court it, grind it out. First to 85 is going to win. We're going to knock the stuffing out of you. And then when he went to Miami, obviously, as he got to Dwayne Wade, it became more of a hybrid of the first two stops. And that's Pat Riley, who's one of the great inspirational coaches and tactical coaches of all time. I'm not putting Frank Reich there, but nobody is. But in terms of that adaptability and understanding how the league is changing, some of the trends, as long as he's open to that, and I think he is. that as long as he is, then he could be a home run hire.
Here's the big thing I think Frank Reich has to solve for this Jets team to have any shot at success. They have been so awful in the red zone. I made this graphic just to illustrate how inept this team has been since that 2015 year we referenced, where they were third best in the league in red zone touchdown percentage. Like, if you can get inside the 20, when you kick field goals, you just don't win. The Jets last year, 31st in the league. You know, three of the last 4 years, they were either 31st or 32nd, dead last in red zone touchdown percentage. And I like, there should be no excuse for this team to not at least be an average red zone offense. They have a solid offensive line. We just talked about the playmakers before. Brees, Braylon Allen is an Adonis. He should be great in short yardage when you get inside the 5 yard line. Like, there is no excuse for this team to be awful in the red zone. And Frank Reich is good at his job, and Geno Smith is still at least just a competent passing quarterback at this stage of his career,
which I think he's going to be. And I think you share that as well. I might be a little bit more optimistic with Geno in terms of the stats, but I think we all think he's certainly going to be better than last year. And he might even be better than Rodgers. I mean, maybe from a couple of years ago. And the one uptick there is the outlier a bit. Not the 21st. You're going to throw a parade for that. But that was Aaron because he knows what the hell's going on. And the other thing, too, yeah, you're right. Now, maybe 85 Bears, 86 Giants with LT and that great defense, Carl Banks and those boys, and the Ravens with Ray Lewis and some other guys. Like, all right, maybe there's a few outliers historically where you can be a defensive team and maybe score a touchdown and, you know, bang 3 or 4 field goals and you could win 16 to 10, you know, 17 to 7, whatever it might be, 17-13. Number one, that's very few and far between. And the Jets don't have a defense like that at all. But the other thing, too, like, if they're in the red zone and they're kicking field goals as much as they have in the last X amount of years, last 10, 11 years or 10 years, well, they don't even have a good kicker yet. So it's not even a guarantee that those are going through.
It's so true. We've talked about the kicker a lot. Until I see the Jets actually have another kicker, I'm not saying the next guy has to be as good as Nick Folk, but someone that we actually could trust and not be just nervous every single time. I'm worried, man, because it'd be so Jets where last year they get the greatest kicking season any of us could have hoped for, and it in a way cost them the number one pick with that kick against the Atlanta Falcons. So the Jets don't pick number one. They don't get Mendoza. And then this year, when they actually need a kicker, because the roster we think is better, the quarterback's better, they're going to be playing a lot of one-score games, then the kicking situation just cost them like it did in 24 that year with Aaron Rodgers.
Dude, can you imagine that? We'll both be down in Tennessee. Rich will be there as well. You know, and it's going to be hot as hell. I was there a couple of years ago. You were there as well. You were there that first game too. And it was really hot. I mean, it's just going to be hot. So it's not like it's going to be windy or rainy. You wouldn't imagine. Could you imagine the first kick the Jets line up? It's duck hooked and it's like to the left or it's pushed to the right and you miss by like 8, not even close to being on target. Dude, it just can't happen, Jake. It can't happen.
To quote our good friend Joe Beningo, oh, the pain.
Our buddy, we love Joe.
Shout out to Joe. Maybe we'll get Joe on a future collective episode.
He'll definitely come on.
For sure, he joins me every Monday during the Jet season. Now, we're both going to be in Nashville, so is Rich. I got my tickets, and every Jet fan out there who needs tickets for Jets-Titans should check it out over on SeatGeek. If you want to learn all about SeatGeek, take a listen.
The Jets Collective is brought to you by SeatGeek. We are fired up for week one because we bought tickets to see the Jets take on the Titans in Nashville. And of course, we use SeatGeek to do it. SeatGeek makes it easy to find great deals for seats for any sport, any concert, festivals, and much more. With over 35 million downloads, it is the number one rated ticketing app on the market. I love using SeatGeek because every ticket's rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know if you're getting a good deal or if you're not getting a good deal. It's that easy. You just look for the green dots. Green means good. Red means bad. Use our code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets on SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Click the link in the description to download the app and have the code added to your account. Thank you, SeatGeek, for sponsoring the Jets Collective.
Use that code, COLLECTIVE10, 10% off. I'm in section 110 for Jets Titans, right behind the Jet bench. So I'll be yelling
that's where
and screaming.
That's where I was a couple of years ago. It's a great spot. I actually saw, and I remember tweeting about this, and I was out of my mind, angered by it. Like, I didn't see Robert Saleh talk to any Jets the whole day. I'm like, what is this guy doing? He's like standing by himself. I'm not even embellishing that. He had no interaction, not even the defense. So I don't think that's going to be AG, but that's a good spot. But if I recall, that's in the Sun, if I remember.
We might be getting cooked. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you better watch it, man. Oh, especially yeah. you.
I got the SPF 1000 ready to go for that one. There's no doubt about that. If you're watching the show live, please click the thumbs up button. That's the like button. Make sure you're subscribed as well. We appreciate everyone hanging out with us here on a Thursday afternoon. It is July 4th weekend. I see Chubb for Club wrote it earlier. Since when has Jake watched soccer? I am fully on the U.S. bandwagon, and I'm rocking my Christian Pulisic jersey, BT, because he's a Jets guy. Yeah, a couple of years ago, people found out Pulisic is a huge Jet fan. In fact, when the Jets played in London in 21, he took a photo with Zach Wilson. Ignore Zach Wilson in the photo and just acknowledge the Jet fan that is Mr. Captain America, Christian Pulisic.
That's the only soccer jersey my son has. He doesn't even really wear it. I don't think it fits him anymore because he played soccer for a couple years, doesn't play anymore. How many sports could you play? Baseball, basketball, football. Like he had to give
and
up
your
soccer.
Son's a stud. You were telling me yesterday at the Barrett conference that he basically pulled a full Mariano Rivera to help you guys advance in your playoff round.
Well, I mean, just to be clear, I didn't use the word. I didn't say my son is a stud. You know, let's be.
Those are my words.
Yeah, I got you. He came. Yeah, our starter Mike did a great job. It was a district all-stars where, you know, if we advance, we've got one more, hopefully one. If we win on Monday, we're district champions for the third straight year. And then there's sectionals and states, and it's really a highlight for the summer. Yeah, he came in. Our starter Mike threw up a shutout, a gem through the first five. Got a little tired. I think it was an error or a blue pit in a walk, and my son came in with two on and nobody out, up two zip, and he had to slam the door. So, but good defense was good, and trust me, it wasn't just him. But yeah, he gets after it. He competes a little bit.
Love it. Shout out to Cole, killing it. Cole Tierney, lockdown ace pitcher, and he's a shortstop too.
He plays shortstop. He plays quarterback too. You know, it's a quarterback name, right? Doesn't it just sound like
Cole Tierney is a great quarterback name? Yep.
Right. Yeah, it is. It just sounds. Now I don't know if he's going to be 6'5", 230. You know, running a 4.59, probably not. But I mean, that's the kind of name you hear, like a kid from Texas who's the seventh pick in the draft. That's his name. It's oh my god. Now he loves it. He's a Jets fan. You know, I remember him last year. I guess it was like the opener. Justin Fields threw that great pass. That was to Garrett Wilson, like the 46-yarder, right?
Yep.
One. Okay. We're sitting there and we're watching the game, obviously. And, you know, we got the roast beef and the mozzarella and we got the roasted red pepper sandwiches, the whole Sunday tradition, blah, blah, blah. And he looks at me and, like, he watches Monday night games. He stays up. Like, he's in it, right? And he looks at me, and it was such a sad look. We're not moving the ball. And then he goes, Dad, he goes, do we really have to be Jet fans? And I go, oh, we don't bail. I said, if I didn't bail, you're not bailing, right? The next play, literally the next play, he threw that 46-yard pass to Garrett. I looked at him. I said, you see? Now we wound up losing the game. The season became what it was. But he is old, man. And I remember he loved Zach. Like, and so did I. Like, I thought Zach was going to be good. You know, that pro day really fooled us, but it has been a slippery slope, but he's young. He's got years to recover from this Jet stuff.
He's young enough where you would think by the time he becomes a teenager, he gets to high school, and that's when like the trash talk with your Giant fan friends really gets going. Hopefully the Jets can give him a couple playoff years. Maybe it's just one by then. Because when I was growing up, like what maybe a Jet fan, we talked about Chad, first jersey I ever owned. Like the Jets were regularly going to the playoffs when I was really becoming a fan. 04, 06. They obviously had Favre in 08, but at least they were 9-7. And then Rex comes in. We're all excited. The championship runs. Like from 97 to 2016, the Jets never had back-to-back losing seasons. There were some 8-8s in there. But like they were a normal NFL franchise. And that's what makes the last 15 years so disheartening. Because you know, your young son, like all his friends are probably wearing Mahomes jerseys or Josh Allen. They go to school and then you're like, who's a Jet fan right now? It's tough.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, I thought that it would be like that here in the suburbs. It's because I know it's changed. Like, you know, now we're Knick guys, but you see a lot of Steph Curry, a lot of LeBron, all that. I get it. Like fans, young fans are a little different than certainly than my generation and even yours to an extent. But no, where we are in New Jersey, like there's more Giant fans. But, you know, and I'm not like one of his buddies, a big Bills fan. Right. So he's always got the Josh Allen jersey. But it's Giants country, and then there's some young Jet fans who are brave in the elements. Still coming. They're not hiding, man. They're proud. I mean, well, maybe not proud, but they're resilient. And the crazy thing too is like, and you start 97 to what year?
2016.
That's right. So 97 was the 9-7 year, Parcells' first year off the one win Coatsite year. And then, of course, we know what happened 98, 99. Vinny got hurt. Rick Meyer, 8-8. Ray Lucas, blah, blah, blah. Al Groh was 2000. I think they started 4-0. And then they kind of fell apart. But I think they finished 9-7.
Yep.
And then Herm came in, did a good job. Like, I get it. It's been amplified the last X amount of years because they have been a train wreck joke. But really, like, people kind of equate, like, the Jets to, like, say, like, the Browns or even the Mets for a more local New York example. And during that run, that was not necessarily the case. There was a good 15-year run where I went into almost every season saying, all right, we're going to be pretty good. And some seasons where I'm sitting there saying, we're going to be really good.
Yeah, I mean, they were not always like this laughing stock. That's what makes the last 15 years, really the last 10 in particular, since the Fitzpatrick 2015 year. I bring this up all the time. It's not even that they've missed the playoffs. Outside of 2015, they haven't come close. They don't have one winning season during that stretch. They don't have a year where they won more than 7 games during that stretch, like that, which is impossible in today's NFL to be that bad.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, the way it's set up with the draft and all that stuff, there's a lot of parity. You know, it really, I think what kind of embellished the plight, and I don't mean the last couple of years, but like in totality of the Jets, if you think about the timeline, so not to give a history lesson, but I think this matters. So 94 was the fake spike. That's obviously the butt of the joke. Aaron Glenn getting burned, the fake spike with Marino, boom. 95, they go 3-13, and then 96, they go 1-15. So the way, and that 94 season, they were actually pretty good with Pete Carroll. They went 0-5 in December.
Yep.
They were going to be a playoff team, man. So it was like that 3-year run, because when I was growing up, I mean, I remember running home from church, literally, like I'd go to church with my mom, and my dad would stay home and watch the games usually. But I would go to church with my mom and my sister, and it was usually 12:30 mass, and which means I got out at 1:30, and it was right around the corner. So I'd race home because I wanted to watch the Jets. And that was Gastineau and Klecko and Freeman McNeil and Wesley Walker and Mickey Schuler and Lance Mell. And Leahy was a good kicker. Like, they were – some years they were really good. You know, 86, the late hit, Gastineau, Kozar. They could have been in the Super Bowl that year. So I think it was those 3 years that really made it look like a joke. And, oh, yeah, by the way, then when you get to, 99, you got Belichick writing on the napkin. It was like a 5-year window where they really became a punchline, but it's not quite the way it's positioned by many doesn't truly match the history outside of the last X amount of years, as we know.
We mentioned Beningo earlier. He always brings this up. As bad as the Jets have been, and again, it's a 15-year playoff drought. It's the most in sports in the Jets history and the Mets history, which started around similar timelines.
Yeah.
The Jets have made the playoffs more than the New York Mets have.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and the thing about the Mets, and this is to your point about when you were young and when you were growing up in the formative, fandom years there, they were good many years in a row, where the thing about the Mets that's proven so elusive is the Mets have one – just go to Baseball Reference, Mets fan, or if you don't believe me, guys, like it's like one good year, and then it's not just a slight drop, it's a precipitous crash. I mean, think about 2024. They beat the Phillies. Vientos goes bonkers. They're looking pretty good. Year one with Mendy, and then 2025, they get Soto, and you're thinking next step – they win 6 fewer games, no playoffs. Then they get Peralta, they do Bichette. Now they're even worse this year. Yeah. Even after the Subway Series in 2000, they took a big step back. So, yeah, they have a scary ability to tantalize and fool you and then morph into something that's almost unrecognizable, where maybe the Jets languish longer, but when they get their act together, they kind of sustain it longer.
You're not wrong, and hopefully the Jets could get some sustained success coming up soon, because we're all dying for it, especially
it's coming
after watching the Knicks turn it around. That provided, I know, some hope for a lot of Jet fans out there. We'll end the show with some listener Q&A. Shout out to the over 200 of you watching live right now. Make sure you like the video and you're subscribed to the channel. And again, if you ever missed the show, I've heard from a lot of listeners, they love consuming the show on either Apple, Spotify, or iHeart, wherever you get your podcast. So after we're live on YouTube, we always post the audio version of the show there for your consumption as well. Patty starts it off and says, am I wrong to feel optimistic about the season? I could see 7-9 wins. Well, there's a big difference between 7-10 and 9-8, but I'm not going to tell anyone how to fan on July 2nd. You want to be optimistic, Patty? I hope you're right.
Yeah, I'm definitely more optimistic than my co-host here, Jake, and Rich, in terms of the ultimate win total. I'm just popping up the schedule because I do want to point out, I know it's Tennessee, obviously, and then the NFC North. I just want to look at one specific thing. To me, to Patty's question, I think 8-8's attainable. I do. Now, a lot of things are going to have to go right. The draft picks that we like now are going to have to pop, and O-line's going to have to stay healthy. Geno's going to have to play well. Reich's all those things that we know. But there is a window here. Like, you get to late October when you, after the New England game, which up there, which is going to be probably a beatdown, you got Miami, and Miami stripping down. Then you got Vegas with a rookie quarterback at home. All right, then you got to go to Kansas City and Buffalo. It gets a little tricky. But there's some winnable games, and even, pardon me, even before the New England game is the Browns. So when you look at week 5, Cleveland, week 7, Miami, week 8, Vegas, and then week 12 again, Miami, and then you have a bye, and then on the back end, you've got Arizona and Minnesota. Like, everybody's so fixated on how the Jets start, and I understand why, because you're talking about job security, Aaron Glenn. I get it. I'm not saying that you're wrong. But the Jets season is going to be defined from the middle part and then that little slice on the back end. But you said this a couple of shows ago. You said must win. I'm not going that far, but I'm going to grant you, like, that first game is ultra important, because then you could be looking at 1-4 or worse going through the gauntlet of the North.
You got to get off to a decent start out of the gate, inspire some confidence, flush last year, you know, down the drain for good, new regime or new coaching staff. Everyone's buying in. Things are going to be different. Because, look, if you could beat the Titans, maybe you could find a way to win one of your next three between the Packers, the Lions, the Bears. You could beat the Browns. Okay, if you lose to the Patriots, well, I mean, you should be able to beat the Dolphins and the Raiders at home. You could be 4-4 through 8, and at least you're having a season. Maybe you build some momentum, some confidence. These rookies are better than we think. And all of a sudden, this game against the Chiefs, you know, maybe Mahomes is banged up. Who knows? Or Josh Allen and the Bills take a step back. There's injuries that, like, you want to give yourself a chance. And the only way I think you could do that, BT, is if you get out of the gate and you don't just kill yourself like they did last year starting 0-7.
No doubt. Listen, we watched a couple of years ago, Zach Wilson almost beat Kansas City. And he outplayed Pat Mahomes. That was a good game, man. That was, that's when I was kind of drinking the Zach Wilson's going to be the guy elixir. But to an extent. Yeah, I think that's obviously well said. I would agree. The other thing, too, is, like, it's really important early on for, like, we talk about what Muji's done and Glenn and Reich. But the flip side of that is we got to get some juice back in the building. And I'm not getting preachy and telling Jet fans not to sell your tickets if the season's over, make a few bucks. You do what you got to do. I don't mean that at all. But, like, the Jets, the onus is on the Jets to provide the fans, us, with reason, not only to show up, but to show up with some energy and some vigor that's going to be sustained for 4 quarters. I mean, you know, when I was at the Browns game in the rain, it's like, oh my God, you know, and it was fun because you had the special teams touchdowns. They won the game. But when it's, you know, 13-3, you know, late second quarter, Jets haven't scored a touchdown, defense hanging by a thread, you know, they're going to be exhausted the second half and you don't have the answers on offense to have a comeback. Who the hell, even if you're the most fervent Jet fan alive, like, you could have 80,000 Beningos in the building or 80,000 Jakes or 80,000 BTs when there's nothing to cheer for, it's an ominous, you know, and the players feel that it's an empty, ominous feel. So you got to get some juice. I know the stadium stinks. We complain about it aesthetically, but when the Jets are good, that place pops, and it's up to the Jets to make it start popping again there, Jake.
I am right there with you. Shout out to Oog. I see he had a super chat. He complimented the show, and he is a fan of Frankie V from U Stadium, who will be at Gangrene Beach Club. He joins me every Monday on my show. Thanks for watching, Oog. We appreciate your super chat. This one is from Robert, who says, another great show, fellas. Love the feedback. Appreciate the content. We appreciate you, Robert. Sunshine Gamers with a super chat here writes in, if Geno has no legal issues and our D plays high edge, what is the threshold to right the ship and bring everyone back with AG over 500 or playoffs? If they go 9-8 and we're going to miss the playoffs, I'd be shocked if Aaron Glenn doesn't get a third year.
Oh, I think it would be unfair and irresponsible not to give him that third year. Yeah. Now, I'll also say this. There's a couple of different versions of 9-8. If you start out and you're, you know, 4-2,
yeah,
or you know, I don't know, whatever, something along that along those lines, and then the last 2 months you bleed out, and there aren't, like, just, it's not because of injuries, like Geno's out and everybody, Garrett's out and everybody's braces out, the old line's banged up. You know, there's a couple of different types of 9-8, but as long as there's not a massive valley in the season where it seems hopeless and dysfunctional and lacks energy and spirit and connectivity, yeah, he wins 9 games. I would guarantee that he's coming back. And if not, I would probably get on Woody for that, unless it's like a Mike Tomlin or somebody like that who really wants to come and coach this team.
I think you're spot on with like how it looks, how you get to the record, because like the best example of this was like the Favre year when they were 8-3, they finished 9-7, and then Woody still made the change, getting rid of Mangini. I don't know if the Jets are going to be able to start 8-3, but like how you start, how you finish, what it looks like, that's all taken into account when you look at the record. Like a couple of years ago when the Jets were 6-3, 7-4, you know, they finished 7-10, and their win total, I think, going into that year was like 6.5. So, oh, Salah overachieved. They won more games, but you didn't feel good when you're 7-4 and then you lose the last six. So how do they play? Your expectations, they're going to change based on new information.
Well, that's why, you know, and I don't think Robert Saleh was a good coach here. Maybe he's going to be good in Tennessee. But you know, in a lot of ways, it was unfair because when they brought in Aaron Rodgers, because he's Aaron Rodgers and First Take is going to talk about him and we're going to talk about him, he's going to consume all the oxygen in the media, and rightfully so based on his history and him going to the Jets, who never have a quarterback. But there were so many other deficiencies on the team. The O-line wasn't built up yet and all the other things that they had to deal with. So it seemed like the Jets should have been a lot better than they were with, you know, when Rodgers got here. But the infrastructure, which I think is far better now than it was then, was not in a position. And even if he doesn't get hurt against the Bills, and I know that they won that game in the walk-off with Zach, I got on the return. But I just think it was like a big splashy headline, and the chapters in the book were very empty and very uninteresting. They just weren't ready.
I think it's well said. Derek checks in with a super chat. Thank you, Derek. Jake BT, love the show. What are your expectations for Juwan Briggs this year? Do you think it's feasible for him to have a breakout year also? I mean, he is like one of the more underrated players on this team. That was a great find late in training camp. Got him from the Browns for a 7th round pick or 6th round pick, whatever it was. And he played really well. Like probably the only guy on this defense I could point to and be like, he overachieved whatever your expectations were for him. So I like the player a lot. I think he has way more pass rush juice than any of us thought. I think he could be a nice young player for this team. I do like him.
He's solid, and I like him too. I'm intrigued. I'm going to use the word. I like him, but I think I'm going to use the word intrigued even more than like there. There seems to be more upside, certainly, than the Browns thought. But that's maybe why they were the Browns. And, you know, I think that when you look at somebody like him, you know, don't the really good organizations, and I'm not saying the Jets are one, obviously, but not yet, but don't the really good organizations kind of have a couple of moves like that? You know, think about Brock Purdy. I'm not saying Brock Purdy's Joe Montana or Steve Young. But, I mean, last pick in the draft, they throw him out there. And, you know, when he's healthy, he's pretty damn good. Even though he doesn't have a lot around him outside of C-Mac at this point in terms of offense. So the good teams generally find, take a flyer on a kid or see something nobody else does. You could say the same thing about the New York Knicks.
I was about to say, how about like Jose Alvarado or some of like the shrewd moves that Leon Rose made to kind of, you know, build the bench up? Like, yeah, 100%.
Jam it. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, those are things kind of within the margins where you're like, when it happens, it's in that little transaction, like the old school in the newspaper, like the daily transactions, where you're like, yeah, okay, whatever. But then it really works out. And if it does work out for somebody like a Briggs or like a Shamet, who just got paid a little bit, but number one, you're getting production, but they're also coming cheap. They're coming cheap because they weren't valued by their previous employer, which obviously in a sport with a salary cap is going to help you out.
I think that is spot on. Carlos enjoyed you, quote, destroying Frank Reich today with a laughing emoji.
Oh, nah, man. I'm not destroying. I just got to keep it real. I mean, come on, Frank Reich. I mean, we can name 100 quarterbacks better than Frank Reich. You can name 10 Jet quarterbacks that were better than Frank Reich, which is the ultimate litmus test. I mean, listen, it's not to be disrespectful. I was just saying, like, you know, I'm very literal. Like, I do this on my show on Unleashed, you know, with J-Rod, like, or a caller or somebody in the chat. Like, to me, the usage of either the overusage or the misusage of the word great, it drives me nuts. Like, everybody's like, oh, he's great. No, great is like the rarefied level, the highest level of esteem, and I try to protect the word. So when I hear Chad say within the first 15 words Frank Reich was a great quarterback, I'm just saying that he wasn't. But I'm not trying to clown on him.
I'll give you great. You want great, BT? Wayne Corbett, yes. Would you agree he's great?
He's my favorite. Yes. No, number 80 is I love him. I love everything he represents. I love his story. I love his toughness. God, man, he's one of the greats. I love him.
Gangrene Beach Club. Come meet PT's favorite Jet ever. Wayne's going to be hanging out with us throughout the afternoon. Tickets still available. Over 130 something tickets, I was told this morning, have already been purchased. And we know people wait to the last second to lock in their spots. So go now, guarantee your place. It is just $25. You'll get in. You'll be able to hang out with all of us, including Wayne Corbett, who's nice enough to be stopping by and hanging out with all the crazy Jet fans coming down to Atlantic City for the afternoon.
That's an interesting mixture of awesomeness and toxicity, right? That's going to be fun. You know, funny, too, about this is how much I love Wayne Corbett. Number one, that was the only jersey that I ever wore to Jet games at the old Meadowlands when I had season tickets for about 3 years. I think I mentioned, not in my name, one of my dad's good buddies who owned the construction company that I used to work at in college during the summers. He wound up basically giving to me for 3 straight years. So I had, and what I did was I had a jersey made at Cosby's, and like I cut the sleeves off and I wrapped like black tape. And I used to wear these black, when it was cold out, these black Nike batting gloves that I still had from Maris baseball. Like and a do-rag. I thought that they were going to call me out of the stand, section 200, to come play. Like, so Corbett was my go-to jersey. I love him. And the other thing about Wayne, and I liked Keyshawn, but I was more of a Wayne guy. I graduated college when Keyshawn's book came out, and I was working in Wall Street at Fidelity trying to get into the business, which, as you know, is not easy. Nobody's just going to give you a microphone and say, you know, when you have no experience, sure, here's a lot of money, go be a broadcaster. So I was trying to get into the business, and I remember, and I would not, and I'm not cheap at all, I would not pay for the book because I didn't want to give Keyshawn the money.
Nice.
I was going to Barnes & Noble's during my lunch break, and I was reading 20, 30 pages a day, and I was hammered through the book in a week, and that's how much, and then I got, you know, when you see, like, the flashlight or
the flashlight game.
Yes. Well, yes, that was against Tampa.
Yeah.
When Keyshawn had one catch for 1 yard, and that was the halfback option, Curtis to Corbett, yep, in the back of the end zone. But Keyshawn said something like, I don't know, like I'm the Green Lantern. He's only like a little flashlight, something like that. And when I read that in the book, I'm like, that Keyshawn, he was kind of dead to me, even though I really did like him. I loved his energy, but I was a number 80 guy always.
Well, come meet Wayne. It's going to be a lot of fun. Again, tickets are on sale, gangrenebeachclub.com. I put it in the live chat for those of you watching live, and it will be in the description for this episode as well. BT, any July 4th plans before we wrap up here?
Yeah, we've got a big party in the neighborhood. It is a massive party. My buddy Mark, who I coach with, who we're friends with, I coach my daughter's softball team with him, and basketball. We've coached together now for a couple of years. Great guy. And he puts on a show. It is a spectacle. And you never know who's going to roll in. Like, I know his wife is very good friends with some of the housewives. So sometimes they come from the
Wow.
And 2 years ago, David Cone rolls in. So we're sitting there having, you know, knocking him back with Coney. Now, I know David a little bit, obviously, from the business. But, you know, a lot of the guys who are in finance or do stuff other than what we do, they just kept hammering him like, yo, Coney, what about this? What about Clemens? What about Posada? What about Torrey? What about Jeter? So it's a great party, and he goes absolutely bonkers. I think he drops about $100,000 for the fireworks display. No joke.
Wow.
No joke.
Wow.
And if it's an embellishment, it's only by a couple thousand. I mean, it's like Grucci. It's in his backyard, which is really big, and they do a great job. So we're doing that. And then Sunday night, we've got a little pre-district all-star championship game workout for the boys at night on our field. And just chilling, man. What do you got going on?
Oh, I will be going back to Long Island for the weekend. My friend has a pool. He's doing the July 4th festivities. And with how hot it is in the city right now, I cannot wait to leave the island of Manhattan and get to Long Island and get in the pool.
I don't blame you. Now, what are you hammering back? Surfsides, beers? What are you drinking there when you drink?
You know, I am a huge surfside guy. I also like Sun Cruisers. I'm not like I enjoy certain beers, but I much prefer like the vodka type of drinks that have come to light. Like Surfside is my favorite. I love iced tea, the lemonade one. So that's usually my go-to. That and a hot dog, I'll be ready to go for July
4th. I'm still waiting. Sal had a big bet with the guy who Clem, who owns Surfside. And last year, Sal won. It was about the Sixers and the Knicks. So Clem dropped off a pallet at the station, right? And we all just grabbed them. And now Sal had another bet, and he won again, and he dropped off, I think, two. So I'm waiting for Sal to drop some more. He said he's going to drop some more off. I like them, too. They're dangerous, though.
They are.
They can sneak up on you, man.
They are. You got to be careful.
You got to be careful. You know?
Love it. Well, you have yourself a great holiday weekend. Thank you to everyone who tuned in. Rich will be back with us at some point next week. He'll be back from vacation, and we'll give you guys an episode ahead of Gangrene Beach Club. BT, enjoy your weekend. Appreciate you as always.
You too, man. Good stuff. Really enjoyed rolling together. We'll get our guy Rich back next week, as you said. I want to wish everybody a happy 4th. Awesome stuff. Great show, man.
Happy 4th to everyone. Click the like button and subscribe to the Jets Collective YouTube channel on your way out of here. Again, enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week right here on the Collective for the Jets podcast.